Hi, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jason, the curator of the Armory Showcase, and we are at the Michikan Game Conference. This episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome back to Season 2 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast of the Army Showcase over at www.tabletopbattlefield.com. And just like that, the convention is kind of done. Well, pretty much we were there long enough to take that short little video, and then they said, "You crazy kids, what are you doing? Run!" But Ryan, grab the camera, run!
We're used to it.
No, just kidding. We were actually the entire weekend. The Michikan 2008 is hosted by the Metro Detroit Gamers, so we want to thank them for having us come up and kind of shoot some video. We got to talk to not only some of the people who run the games, a local store owner, actually a local soon-to-be store owner. Also, we got to talk to some of the people who run the convention, kind of learn a little bit of the history of it, some of the kind of cool stories, how this convention goes back a long time. I'll let them fill in all the details. So why don't we start talking with the two guys we got to talk to from the Metro Detroit Gamers. We sat down once with Pat, who's a webmaster, and then later with Bob, who's the prize coordinator of Metro Detroit Gamers, and both got to talk a little bit about the history of the convention and how things have been over the past, really, I guess, they've run almost over 20 to 30 years, I believe they said. So
way over our time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a long trip for them. So why don't we go ahead and let them talk about things for a little while, and we'll see how things go.
Okay, my name is Bob Fix, and I'm the board game director and prize coordinator for Metro Detroit Gamers. Metro Detroit Gamers has been around since approximately 1972. They began in small conventions in St. Clair Shores, eventually moved to the University of Detroit and then Oakland University. For a period of time, they had some downtown at Cobo Hall in Detroit. We were the first gaming group to host an Origins event, which was in 1979 at the University of Michigan. And it is continued on since then. After the kind of heyday of the conventions locally, I'd say in the mid-80s, the conventions became smaller. We had local conventions in Warren, and over the past few years, we've had conventions in Warren at the Italian-American Cultural Center at Macomb Community College, and for the last year, we've been back at Oakland University. We're having conventions.
They would have premieres from everybody in the business, so Gary Gygax, Kevin Zambita from Palladium, things like that. A lot of homemade stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you looked at maybe the Tri-Tac, or
you're going to
look at the big metal spaceship later.
Mm-hmm. So let's tell us a story about the Gary Gygax, one of the very first dungeons he made, Dungeons & Dragons. He actually play-tested the first time here.
Yep. That's been my understanding.
Okay, well, again, Origins is one of the, right now the two big conventions in the country are Gen Con and Origins. Origins was the first national convention, and initially it was run by some of the game companies like Avalon Hill and SPI. Again, the Metro Detroit Gamers was the first non-company to run it, which was a big thing, obviously, because we were the first gaming group that was willing to do it, and we ran it in 1979 at the University of Michigan, and then again in 1983 at Cobo Hall. So in that respect, that was a very big plum for us, because not only that, but by being the first gaming group to do it, for the next probably 5 to 10 years, we actually had a say in where conventions went as time went on. So we got to look into other gaming groups and see if other gaming groups had the manpower or the ability, just from an internal nature, to be able to put on the large conventions that was Origins back in that day. That was sort of a time in flux, because up until then, most of the board game tournaments, at least, were two-player war games, because that was the big thing back then. And it wasn't until the mid-90s that the family-style games, the German games that you know now, started becoming popular. And when I became the board game coordinator or director, I started realizing that was the direction that the board game at least events were going, because a lot of times I think people wanted to come to conventions because normally if it was a two-player game, you could get a friend or someone in your neighborhood, so to speak, or someone from your gaming group and play the game, where if it was a multiplayer game where there was 5 or 6 people, it was a little harder just to get that kind of group together. So that was, at least from my point of view, that's what happened a lot in terms of my taking over and the board gaming aspect becoming more multiplayer oriented, more toward the games that are more popular now.
So do you have any plans, like what you want to do to improve gaming around here?
What I would like to do is perhaps some charity events. There's another gaming group in Ontario that I talk to via message boards, and they do wargaming like a lot of people here do. And I thought, man, it'd be sweet if we had the Metro Detroit versus Southern Ontario wargaming charity event, mm-hmm. where each of us picks a charity and people come in and they pick their different games, they fight it out, and whoever wins the most points or, you know, whatever, gets to take the money and give it to charity.
Yeah,
that sounds like a fun thing. The board game guy, Robert Fix, was doing, at some point, he was doing some games, you know, running board games at libraries and things mm-hmm. like that. And I'd like to see more of that.
The main thing here, to an extent, is that the younger generation that's out there gaming now is more into the cards and the role-playing. We'd like to get them a little more into the board gaming and the miniatures aspect to draw more people in. Because now, generally with cards, you have situations where the hobby shops will want to take and do the card events because they have the... they have the qualifiers, they have the, you know, the masters or whatever the people, you know, the qualifications they have, and hobby shops usually want to try and keep those because that's business coming into their stores, and I certainly understand that. But we're looking to try and get more of the younger gamers into the conventions to play more of the miniatures and the board games and even and the role playing as well.
That was Bob and Pat from the Metro Detroit Gamers kind of talk about the history of the Michicon Conference. And probably a good time to mention right now, throughout the weekend, we probably took close to an hour of video, and the show is only 45 minutes long. That includes us here talking back and forth about 5 or 10 minutes. So obviously, some of the... is that bird going after my new plant I just planted? Okay, good. So obviously... we're looking out the window here. I just planted my new metal Hungarian wax pepper plant.
We'll take a picture of it and show it to you, okay? So you,
but seriously,
you need to see
this. On a more serious note, we get distracted very easily around here if you've never watched a show before. But yeah, so... obviously, so therefore, we had to cut some of the video off in the interviews, just kind of keep things moving a little bit. So if you are interested in receiving your full interview, if you're one of the people interviewed in its entirety, send me an email over at jason@rocklesoftware.com, and we'll arrange something for you to get the entire interview in its entirety. So after we got done talking with them, well, actually, we talked to them very late in the convention, but we won't tell that people in the video. We actually got to talk to Richard Tohoka from TriTac Games over at TriTacGames.com. And he actually gave us a cool thing to try out, so we're going to have to get around to playing these at least a little bit, see how they go. He gave us a couple RPG things and one miniatures game. He's clearly very interested in Altered Dimensions. He gave us Holes, which is Wild Miniatures Combat, amazing combat between dimensions. You got Duck Trooper, the epic battle for survival between humans and invading ducks, another dimension. And then Fringeworthy, which is an absolutely massive role-playing game. The game of interdimensional adventure. So he certainly likes to have all sorts of crazy adventure games of interdimensional stuff and lots of alternate dimensions. But that day, well, I want to thank him for giving us his things. He actually autographed a copy of Fringeworthy for us, if I can say the name right.
Very nice of him.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah, very, very cool guy.
And that day, we're actually interviewing him about an upcoming game he's working on called Thud. It's actually planned for release sometime next year in 2009. It's designed to be a very fast-playing miniatures game across, like, cities battling all sorts of crazy interdimensional creatures. So, you want to go ahead and I guess we'll just run that interview and
let's roll
the game for us.
I'm here with Richard Tohoka, and he's going to show off his own game he created called Thud. So, let's get started here. Just kind of explain us the basics of what this game is.
What the game is miniatures and fun. It's just a small group of people versus another small group of people, and basically you can just have fun. It's a shoot 'em up mm-hmm. game. Basically, buried peanuts.
So, like, how long ago did you make this game?
Well, we started doing this about 15 years ago, little bit by little bit. We've been mm-hmm. playing with the rules back and forth. We do it at conventions occasionally.
Okay.
You know, once or twice a year, I pull the city out of, you know, the containers. And we set it up, and we let the gamers play.
So you got a bunch of figures over here. Are those all for the game?
Everything is for the game. We've got glow-in-the-dark zombies. We've got aliens. Mostly the HO scale is 20 millimeters. So what we're going to do is we have 20 millimeter plastic. We have dinosaurs. We have giant bugs. We have creepy freaks.
Oh, that old game.
We've got all sorts of stuff. Yeah, the Creepy Freaks game wasn't great, but the miniatures are wonderful.
Oh, those crazy, creepy-looking monster things.
And which is good. We can do stats for them and, you know, that kind of thing. We're using combinations of old Roco military miniatures, Matchbox,
these guys out
scale,
here?
Just about anything we can find.
Okay. So all this terrain here is then from, like, a railroad setup?
Anytime we can find any kind of an HO scale railroad or anything close to it, we grab it and we build it.
Oh, okay. Looking pretty good.
A little bit of modeling. It's a little grungy looking, but then again, you know, most Midwestern towns look a little grungy.
So. Yeah, I've seen a couple of those older towns. So what's the basic rules like? Everything just moves in inches and you just roll a couple of dice to resolve
it? We move by inches. We do a very simple system for resolution. It's basically you roll a die 100. You know,
okay. Mm-hmm.
And you turn as movement, you turn as fire, then you eliminate, then you go from there.
Okay. So it's primarily a two-player game then? You got the government forces versus some...
Anything up to 10 players on
each side. Oh, anything up to 10 players?
Oh, yeah. We've had 24 players playing at a time.
Wow. So how long did a 24-player game take?
Very fast. It's as fast as we go. They move, they shoot, they fire, they eliminate the people off the board, and they keep going.
So an average, say, two-player game, how long would you expect that to take?
Two-player game, probably two hours best.
All right. Sounds pretty good, then.
A much larger game. Usually, the longest game we've ever played has been about 3 hours.
Okay. So you mentioned that you actually want to publish a game and get it produced.
We're going to be publishing it probably next year.
Okay, so sometime next year?
It'll be through Tri-Tac Games and Graphics. Right. And so we also produce role-playing games. We produce CD, PDF, we actually produce books.
Okay, yeah. So you got your own publishing company then?
Oh, we have been for nearly 30 years.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
We do tables at Gen Con. We do that kind of thing.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks, Richard, for showing us the game. Is there any place on the internet that you guys can people come and check out your game and your company?
TriTechGames.com.
TriTechGames.com.
All right. And the site's been there forever, and you can see all the games, what we're doing, and that'll also link you to several other support sites.
Okay.
For people that play our games, that kind of thing.
Very cool. I'll put that link in the show notes for everyone out there. So with that, I just want to thank you, and as the game looks pretty good.
So hope you enjoyed the little interview with Richard Tohoka of TriTac Games. If you want more information about it, it's over at TriTacGames.com. Yeah, TriTacGames.com. I'll put that link in the show notes there if you want to check it out. And that was one of the games we did get a chance to play, unfortunately. But next time we go, we'll definitely
one
have
and
to
two
play.
One
and two, yeah.
Yeah, I think we were like over there several times trying to get at that table just to see if they were playing it, and they never were playing it. And then there was one time, I think it was like later on Saturday afternoon, I walked over there, and they were putting the stuff away. I'm just like, missed it.
But I've heard really good things about that game. Everyone has played it and really enjoyed it. So next convention we go to, we'll definitely check it out and take some time off the side to play it. So next up here, we took a trip back to the Civil War with the game Fire and Fury, which is a miniatures game, obviously based in the American Civil War. This battle is actually, what are we watching? The Battle of Iuka in September 19th, 1862. This is John Holcomb talking, so I guess we might as well go ahead and just show the interview right now. I've got nothing else to say about it. He does a pretty good job of explaining the game, so let's take a look at the interview we shot with him.
It's good stuff.
All right, I'm with John here, and he's playing Fire and Fury. So why don't we go ahead and just give him just a quick explanation of what this game is, like how does it work and things.
Okay, well, first of all, it's the Fire and Fury system is based during the American Civil War, which is the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And this particular game, we're looking at an 1862 scenario.
Okay.
And this would be the northeast corner of Mississippi during Grant's invasion of the South, the Western Army.
Okay.
Fire and Fury is a game system that's been around for about 10 years now, 10 to 15 years. Originally, it was based for brigade-level combat.
Mm-hmm.
What we're playing here today is a beta version, a prototype version of the next release of the rules, which is a regimental-level game. So you can do a lot smaller battles instead of some of the larger ones that would take. Basically, how the game system works is you have your typical regiment here, and you move, you maneuver as a regiment.
Mm-hmm.
You try to keep all the stands together.
Just kind of have to wheel the whole regiment around. You can't move wherever you want. You got to kind of turn the whole thing and move slowly.
What you would do is you'd roll to test to see if they're well handled. In other words, their officers are able to command the troops under fire. And if they pass, a 9 would be a good number to pass. And then basically they can do their maneuver. Now, you can do several maneuvers. You can wheel.
Okay.
And then you could move like 12 inches forward.
Okay.
So you'd move the whole unit forward. It takes two actions to do a full move.
Okay. So right now, the way the battle's set up, are all the guys in weapon range to open fire right away, or is there a lot of moving to get in firing range?
The fire range for the rifled muskets is about 12 inches.
Okay.
I would say that after the Confederates move their first turn, mm-hmm. which they're about 3 or 4 inches outside of range, you're going to start seeing some action right away.
That's kind of good.
Of course, the guns can fire up to 20 inches, so you'll definitely have some fire from our guns this first turn here.
Okay. So now you spent a long time setting this battlefield up. Is it basically very similar to how the battlefield was the time the actual battle took place?
Yes. As a matter of fact, to research this particular battle, I used several articles, researched several magazine articles, and a couple different rule systems. Johnny Reb is another rule system that features this particular scenario. And there's a couple other scenario books that have been published as well. One of the best assets, though, for research is the America's Civil War magazine.
Okay.
And this particular edition was published back in May of 1999. And it actually has a complete article on this entire battle here.
Is that magazine still being published today?
Yes. As a matter of fact, yeah. You can still get a subscription to this.
Okay.
It's got a lot of great reading.
That's cool. So one last question here for you. I noticed you got this huge binder behind you. Is that the rule book, or is that... What is that exactly?
Well, you know what's neat about Fire and Fury, I'll show you real quick, is... The guy who originally designed the game, Rich Hasenauer,
mm-hmm.
he's a graphic artist.
Okay.
And not only was he interested in publishing a game system,
mm-hmm.
but he actually shows you in this game system how to actually paint and base your figures.
Oh, okay. So this is more than just the rules. There's a lot of...
And he shows you how to build terrain and
how to
label all your figures. Yeah. Like I say, I have deepest respect for this particular author, mm-hmm. for his good work that he's done with the gaming industry, especially these rules that he's published. And then even further on in the book, he actually has scenarios that you can actually play.
Okay. So to finish up here, is there a website something people can go and check this game out, learn more about it, where they buy the rules and things?
I would say you could probably go to the miniatures page.
Okay.
If you guys are familiar with the miniatures page, there's a lot of great links in there that'll take you to different online vendors. You can actually buy miniatures. We have a miniature manufacturer here in Michigan. They're out of Grand Rapids, called 19th Century Miniatures.
Oh, cool.
Or they're also known as Old Glory 15s. And I recommend them because they're kind of a local business, and they do a great job. I use a lot of their figures in my setup. Yes.
So some of the figures out here are from the company?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of the stuff is scratch built.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the trees you can pick up at your local train hobby store.
Are they just model railroad trees?
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
And then just a little technique that I use is for the roads, I cut felt. What do you got? And then I just flock them using some caulking.
Okay. That's cool. All right. Well, thanks for showing the game to us. It's definitely a little bit different than what I played before. I played some Civil War games, but they're really kind of simple ones. Like, was it Battle Cry, was it? By Richard Borg. I didn't really like that game that much. But
yeah, there's a lot of nice systems out here. I really like the Fire and Fury system because, I've just gotten used to it over the years. You know, it's you do what you feel most comfortable with.
Well, that's our interview with John Holcomb for Fire and Fury, the American Civil War miniatures game. Also, like, an interesting game we, once again, didn't get a chance to play. But next time around, I'd like to try it. I've played some of the more simpler Civil War games in the past, and they were kind of lame. But we'll see. Maybe some more detailed ones, the ones that actually have the cool, like, accurate terrain and kind of fun to play. So next time, we'll try that out. Because there's actually a convention coming up later in the year that's all historical gaming. So if that game's there, we'll definitely I like to just jump in for at least for a little while and see what the rules are like. So then I get to send Ryan over to interview Ewell Kinsley for Clear for Action, a World War II naval combat game. So what did you think of that?
Well, I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, I didn't really get to play it to where I can understand the gameplay and all. But my first reaction was, I always get stuck with the weird stuff. Being my first interview for something like this ever, Jason decides to stick me in a place where I got to take my shoes off. And, of course, it was I hadn't taken a shower in like a day and a half, so Jason's like, do not take your socks off. But other than that, I mean, they were very friendly. The guys were joking around.
Oh, they're a hilarious bunch of guys.
Yeah. And I that's a game I would like to play just because I like to glean from what they know, the rules and stuff from that, because it looked pretty interesting.
And you get to play across the entire floor. It's just huge battle. Plus, I love the little Apple IIc computer they had from 1984 that they actually require to run the game. So,
just one thing. I mean, beginning of this interview, I only had one question to ask him, and then it turned out to where it's like I couldn't stop asking him questions because I was really curious. So let's go see it.
All right.
Hello, I'm Ryan, and this is Yul, and I'm in my socks. Explain this. We're going to be taking a look at this game. What's it called again?
Clear for Action.
Cleared for Action. And now I have no clue. This is obviously naval combat, and what does that exactly entail for this type of game?
Well, it's a game that originates actually prior to World War II. It uses models that were used for recognition during World War II. It's a game that simulates World War II naval combat, at least this particular game. There are other games that simulate sail, Civil War, World War I, even modern. So, but that's the whole idea behind it.
Okay. And so this is just a different faction of a game that it has like different ships, like you said, throughout the whole realm. Now, how do you play this?
Well, there are different sets of rule systems depending on what a particular person likes to use. Some are more detailed than others. Some are more of a simulation, and some are more of a game. So some are more entertaining, and some are more detailed. But the whole idea is that there's data or information that we know historically about how the ships were built and how the shells performed. And so the gaming system is designed to kind of simulate what would happen in reality if these particular ships came together. Sometimes we recreate battles that really happened. Sometimes we do battles that never happened, but people wish maybe that they had happened.
A could have been scenario.
Right.
That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
Now you're saying you try and copy the ships exactly how they were. In that type of combat, do you also count like how many men were in the ships, or is it just our artillery and what the ships?
It's more the firepower of the ships and the armor of the ships.
Okay,
that's the primary factors: the guns, the capability of the guns, how far they could shoot, how much armor they could penetrate, the armor of the ships, how good the armor was, what areas of the ships were armored, what areas of the ships were not. I mean, obviously, a big ship can totally trash a little ship, but a little ship can hardly hurt a big ship. So, you know, it's based on the physical characteristics of the ships as they existed.
And you guys have submarines? That was a question popped in my head. Do you have like submarine type combat in this type of game?
Well, on the floor, submarines don't work real well because submarines would be hidden, but they can be integrated into it. But what you have to do is you have to go to a grid system on the floor so that you can move the submarines in a hidden movement. And then, of course, you have to do some sort of random rolls to try to figure out if they're spotted or if they're not spotted, if they can get close enough to shoot torpedoes, that kind of thing. So.
Now, as far as me, I'm a gamer who's never actually played this type of game before. How long do you think it would take for someone like me to get used to this game?
And probably a half hour.
Half hour? Okay, so it's a pretty simple game then.
The way we play it at a convention, we designed it so that anybody could step in and learn to play right away. It's supposed to be fun. I mean, when you're at a convention, you want to have fun, you want to do stuff. So that's... You know, you want to be able to do things and not get too bogged down with the rules. So it's pretty simple. I mean, you take your order sheet, you figure out where the ship needs to go, figure out where the enemy ship is going to end up, you guess the ranges, you fire, and if you hit, the computer, the ancient computer, takes care of the damage data. I mean, that is a Apple IIc built in 1984, and yes, we still use it, primarily because we've all been too lazy to convert it to some sort of Microsoft DOS base or any kind of modern program language. It uses AppleSoft Basic.
Okay.
So.
So what happens if that computer craps out? Are you screwed?
If that computer craps out, we are screwed. And then there is a poor programmer that's part of our extended group of gamers that is in Chicago, and he's been working on a DOS version that we hope one day will actually work. But he took my coding, and then he has tried to adapt it. I think he's using C++. So.
I just had one more question.
Okay.
It's about the ships. If I were to, can you buy them in any type of hobby store, or do you have to special order them online?
I don't know many hobby stores that actually carry this size, the 1-1200. There are a few, but primarily the best way to buy these ships would be to go online.
Okay, and what website would you recommend?
Well, there's Superior Ships, there's El Navco, there is Morning Sunshine is another website that has a large variety of the ships. The smaller versions of these, the 1-2400s, are things that you can find at conventions, you know, the vendors. I know, for example, there's a vendor here that has a large variety of the 1-2400s. Okay. Would be half the size of these ships.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And you guys have a great time gaming.
Let's deal with the bare feet.
The bare feet? Well,
the bare socks.
these models are very expensive. I mean, some of them approach, you know, the $100 range. And so if you step on them, we want to make it hurt, you know. But seriously, we just want to make sure that people are looking and you know, because with a shoe on, you'll do serious damage to these models.
And if you have your bare feet or socks on, you start stepping, you realize, oh, I'm stepping on something.
Right. And if you did a close-up of some of these, you'll see that they have, you know, superstructures and antennas and everything that are pretty delicate. So, okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The first game we sat down with was Canvas Eagles, which is a World War I game. It's actually kind of an extension of a board game called Blue Max. And it's actually pretty cool. This is the one game I did get to sit down and play. So it's a lot of fun because there's a lot of, you basically move simultaneously, so you kind of try to guess what your opponents are doing. But and it has some really cool miniatures. The miniatures are from a game called Wings of War, but they had these cool little telescoping bases to it, so you actually could do elevation in addition to just horizontal movement. So let's go ahead and roll that interview in. That'd be kind of neat to see this game.
All right, I'm here with Bob, and this is the game Canvas Eagles. So why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about this game. Just give us a brief overview of what it is.
Canvas Eagles is a adaptation of a board game called Blue Max and uses miniatures. These particular miniatures are from a game called Wings of War. They can be found online. The bases themselves are handmade by a friend of mine in his basement. He's got a machine shop, and they are made out of steel that holds the aircraft in place. And the telescoping rod is actually an inspection mirror with the mirror cut off. The miniatures are fixed using some fuel line from aircraft miniatures, and they can be, of course, removed and added as you wish, so you only need a limited number of bases. Each of the airplanes have a capability of going up to a height level of 9, and this is differentiated by each for each aircraft based on a separate SSD that each aircraft gets, and these are also available free online at www.eaglesmax.com. The rule set can also be downloaded from there as well, and there's a number of other amateur sites on the web where you can get SSDs, bombing rules, Zeppelin rules, and so on. This is actually a copy of what the rule book would look like after you downloaded it off the net. Damage in the game is handled by a combination of the aircraft's abilities at a specific range, as well as modifiers based on angle of fire, height differential, and so on, and damage has resulted in red or blue chits. There are 100 red and 100 blue chits, and you can make them yourselves, as I did with these here. Or you could use a table that can be downloaded from Board Game Geek, which outlines all the different damages on a D100 table.
Okay.
Some of the specifics of the game that are included is, for example, firing. For example, this aircraft can fire on this aircraft because it's straight ahead of it.
Okay.
And we usually use red tokens because if you fire on it in a subsequent phase, you get an additional modifier.
Okay.
You also have tailing abilities. For example, this aircraft, which is facing off the board, can tail this aircraft because this aircraft's forward arc has this aircraft who's in its rear arc. So there's tailing abilities as well. And, of course, you have airplanes that can be on fire and airplanes that can smoke. And those affect their abilities as well.
All right, so like you mentioned, just briefly explain how you move the fighters around the board. Like, how do you plan your movements out?
Let's say, for example, you're using this aircraft and it's facing in this particular direction. Its current height is 1, 2, 3, so its height is now 3. So what happens is the maneuvers that you can perform for the aircraft are defined on the board. Now, this particular aircraft cannot move faster than speed 2.
Okay, so it's pretty limited.
So it's limited for this particular type of aircraft. It has a code number on it. For example, it says 14R2. 14 is the maneuver number. R means it's moving in the right turn, and 2 is its speed. So in this particular case, for it to move 14R2, it would move 1 hex forward, 1 hex to the right, and then it would turn right. So that would be its movement. So its movement is simultaneous and not revealed to other players, including your own allies, it could end up with some hairy moments. You can intend to try to fire on somebody else and end up having to be fired on by somebody you didn't see coming at you. Each aircraft has, like I said, its own maneuver schedule and its own ability to climb, dive, and so on, stability rates, and all those are differentiated for each of the aircrafts on the different charts.
So with this game here, like, I was just playing movement. So movement's all simultaneous in that, and before the turn, everyone plans a movement out and you execute all at once. Okay. So explain a little bit about the tailing. How does the tailing benefit you?
Well, here's the tailing rules. The rear arc of the aircraft was defined by the 3 hexes off of its rear like this. And its forward arc is the reverse.
Okay.
So in order to tail, an aircraft must be in its forward arc, and the tailed aircraft must be in its rear arc. So in this particular case, this airplane could tail this airplane. We usually define that with markers. The green being the tailed aircraft, and this green being the tailing aircraft. Now, even though this aircraft cannot fire in this aircraft because its firing arc goes straight ahead, it can tail him and gain a modifier for fire the next turn. Now, if this airplane were here, not only does he tail him, but he also would get the fire on him this turn and mark him down in this manner. So there's modifiers for being tailed and fired on. So it causes damage to increase.
So this game is designed in such a way that you really want to, each player really only controls one airplane in the game?
You can. It depends on how good you are. But the problem with controlling more than one aircraft is that you have the tendency to fly your aircraft into formations.
Okay.
You'll tend to have them cover each other, which is not realistic for the time. For the time, they had no radios. Everything depended on hand signs. And in this particular case, this pilot could see him, but he couldn't see him.
Yeah, that's insane.
So having each person control a single aircraft is probably the best thing to do.
Okay. And also, are there rules or campaigns that you want to play multiple battles in a row?
Yes. There's ace rules as well. Where killing certain aircraft, you accumulate points. Once you accumulate so many points, you become an ace. And then there's abilities you can pick as an ace. Tailing abilities, firing abilities, ducking abilities, fire extinguishing abilities. There's also different campaigns. There's markers that you can use on the map board, for example, to indicate targets. Well, when you go to bomb the target, which is usually with a grenade held out the outside of your cockpit, you flip the counter over. Well, it could be a target worth victory points, or it could be an anti-aircraft gun, and you just brought yourself under fire. There's also models that represent barrage balloons and also models that represent zeppelins, and the idea is balloon busting at that point.
So the last thing I'm going to have you do here is just explain the whole idea of how the board, like how did you build this board, and is there a reason why it's all split up into sections like
that? Well, actually, this particular board is made to be mobile. So I actually went to Home Depot, and these are tiles that you use on bathroom floors, for example. They're formed in hexes, and they come in these pre-attached sheets. If you turn them over, you'll see that they're attached with rubber. They come this way.
Okay.
And you buy a dozen of them for the same price as 10. I think it's about a buck a piece, a buck and a half a piece per tile. So I can float the map board. So, for example, if the action goes off the board, I could take the tiles from this end, put them down on this end, and continue the battle without having to put another map board down.
So you just move them over there.
Exactly.
Okay,
and move them with the battle as it goes. So if the battle were drifting that way, I could pick these up, and put those down on that end.
Okay.
And the reason why I've used the cloth down on the top of the table is because if you use a dining room table, the bottom of these are quite abrasive and they could scratch the finished surface.
Makes sense.
So in this particular case, it's an old piece of green cloth.
Okay. All right, well, just finish up here. So if people want to learn more about this game, what's some good websites to go to for them?
One of the best game sites is BoardGameGeek.com. Second site I would go to is EaglesMax.com, or do a Google search under Canvas Eagles, and it'll take you to multiple websites.
Is that just like Eagles with the word Max drawn?
Yes, all one word, CanvasEagles.max.com.
Okay. All right, well, I'll put a link in the show notes to everybody, so thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Nice to learn about this game.
All right. Enjoy.
So that was our interview with Bob Sweeney over Canvas Eagles. And also, he wanted to mention that if you want to purchase those bases, the little machine hex bases and the telescoping rods, you can change elevation. His friend actually sells those. You can contact him at limbolance@yahoo.com. That's limbolance@yahoo.com. And, of course, I'll put that email address in the show notes if you want to check him out. And it's going to cost $10 to get the little hex base and the telescoping rods with the little tubing that attachment miniatures to. So the actual planes aren't included. Like you mentioned, those are the Wings of War miniatures. You have to buy those separately. So it's $10 just for the base. And while I was off doing that, Ryan was off playing another game, and he seemed to really like it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I found this game while I was wandering around while Jason was playing the... game, yeah. Me and names today. Kind of cool. It's called a Manchurian Mandate, and just want to thank David for allowing me to video shoot and talk about the game. I wasn't able to interview him because he's kind of shy around the camera, but he did let me speak right in front of the whole game board thing, and let me just spew my mouth about this thing. So let's just roll the tape, and I'll talk about where to go to the website afterward.
Sounds good.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm here. I just discovered this this Battlefield setup. It's called Manchurian Mandate. It's a pretty cool game. You have tanks. You got ogre miniatures that are and along with other tanks and stuff. And this scenario is tanks are invading this town that Chinese are. There's a Chinese faction that's guarding it along with laser towers, and so lasers are just like destroying on these tanks and just ripping them apart. But these guys are trying to invade and get this in. And I want to thank David. He was kind enough to let us view this and take a look at this, and thank him for playing this as well. This is a game that's probably going to be one of my all-time favorite games now. I'm just having that much fun with it right now. This game started back in 1977, so it's been around. If you want to know any more about this game, just go to sjgames.com and also to warehouse23.com, and you'd find a lot more information about it and possibly get more figures and stuff from it. That's pretty much it.
Interview of the weekend was with Rob from the Guild House. Essentially, the Guild House is basically a traveling store that goes from convention to convention, selling all sorts of oddball stuff, like little stuffed animals. They had a lot of stuff with food themed things. They had a little werewolf guy he's going to show us. But it's basically a traveling store that goes from convention to convention. So why don't we go ahead and talk to Rob? Let's show us some of his product and some of the kind of things he does.
All right, I'm here with Robert from the Guild House, and we're just going to go over, I guess, what is the Guild House? Why don't you tell us what it is?
The Guild House is a gaming and anime store that we're trying to put together.
Okay.
We basically sell games, animes.
So some of the products behind us here?
Stuff like that. Any fun stuff for any kind of gamer. Okay.
So right now, are you just kind of doing the whole convention scene, going around different conventions and like selling what you have here?
Yes, we're trying to start our own store, and we're basically hitting the conventions so that we can prove the viability of the gaming store.
Makes sense. So are you a gamer yourself? Do you play any games?
Oh yes, I started back with the red and blue box Dungeons and Dragons in the late 70s.
Wow, okay.
And I've been a fan of gaming ever since, and the fall of gaming stores in Michigan is what inspired us to do this.
So what's your favorite game? What do you really like to play?
Well, right now, currently it's the Star Wars role-playing game.
Okay. All right. So do you have any kind of weird or obscure, unique products that you sell that you might not be able to get anywhere else or be kind of hard to find?
Well,
Or just kind of goofy, weird things like your assortment of Cthulhu plush dolls?
The Cthulhu plush dolls are pretty much pride and joy, especially the Cthulhu Christmas wreath.
And kind of ironic.
This is one of our more bizarre things, because it's a werewolf plush.
Oh my goodness.
Where, at the full moon,
it's like a
poor lumberjack,
entire reversible thing?
Yes.
That is awesome.
Turns into a slavering werewolf.
Oh my goodness, that's quite creative.
Yes. We saw this and we just had to have it just to sell, because it's just such a creative and inventive idea.
Right, well, that sounds good. So do you have like a website, or if you can come find more information about the Guild House or something?
We don't
like
have a website, but we do have a Yahoo group and an email address.
Okay. Do you know what the address of Yahoo groups is, or do you search for Guild House and the Yahoo groups and find
that? Yeah, I'd search for Yahoo groups and Guild House, because off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay.
My wife has that information. But our email address is myguildhouse@yahoo.com.
Okay.
So if you want to send us an email and get an update on how we're doing.
And where are you planning to open a store at once you get it all running?
We plan on opening up a store in the Pontiac area.
Okay.
And we'd like a place where people can, just like this convention, meet, have fun, play games, and just enjoy the aspect of gaming.
All right, well, sounds good. Thanks for coming on the show. It's nice meeting you.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with your store.
Thank you very much.
So that was Rob talking about his little store, the Guild House, that takes a convention to convention. And with that, that was pretty much the end of the weekend for us. It's pretty late Saturday night by the time we left, and just kind of took off and took it a little bit easy to get all our video organized together and go from there. So, anything else you want to say about the convention to wrap things up?
Well, just to say, since it was my first convention and didn't know, and being thrust into it because I didn't even realize I was going to a convention.
Yeah, I didn't tell him it was a game convention about an hour before the last.
All he said was, "Yeah, Ryan, I need you to operate a camera for me. Can you do it?" I'm like, "Sure." I'm thinking it's going to be like a couple hours, not realizing it's going to be the whole weekend. So, thinking I had an entire weekend to maybe edit video and stuff, realized I didn't, and I had to do this whole thing. Which, I mean, believe me, when I got there, I really had a great time. And just thanks to the guys who invited us there. We had an awesome time, and we hope to come back very soon.
Of course, we want to say thanks to the Metro Detroit Gamers who hosted the Michicon Conference. Thanks for having us up there. It was a lot of fun. We'll probably see you guys again in the future, or at least to get up there to play games. So with that, if you have any questions or comments, send them to jason@rocklesoftware.com. That's rocklesoftware.com. And, of course, follow me on Twitter over twitter.com/TT_battlefield and see my random thought of the day. I guess anything else you want to say then? About anything at all?
Can I endorse my Twitter site too?
Go for it.
Yeah, just go to rmadman. I think it's rmadman4 or rmadman. And
good thing he knows his username and Twitter right off his head. That's a very impressive feat of him.
Yeah, just look on there. I might be hooking up with blondes or whatever. You never know.
So. All right, well, thanks for watching. We'll see you again in about 2 weeks, the next episode of the Tabletop Battlefield.
Copyright 2007-2008 Rocko Software, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial License.
The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer and is acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com and is used under a Creative Commons License.